the Bhagavad Gita as the thread to explore this topic. And this is more autobiographical than I usually get, but I was thinking about my own life in relationship to the Bhagavad Gita, especially since this year the theme of Ananda has been chosen to be the Gita, and Swami launched his version, his interpretation, just a few weeks ago. In 1968, when I was in grammar school, we had a book fair at my school, Notre Dame des Victoires. And we went in on Wednesday, we scouted out the books we might want to buy, and went back Thursday and bought them. So I bought this little book called Daily Meditations. It was a book way ahead of its time. It had an inspiring quote for each day of the year. And in this book, I bought it actually to be a little bit cheeky with my older brother who was just beginning to explore meditation. And I thought it was so foreign to me at that time, meditation and all the different concepts. But this book had within it quotes from the East, a lot of them, from the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Mahabharata, and of course the Bhagavad Gita. And the thing that stuck with me from that book was it talked about reincarnation. There was a quote in it from George Harrison of the Beatles, and it said, I still remember it. It was something along the lines of, you just keep coming back until you get it straight. There were quotes from Albert Einstein, Buddhism, Lotus Sutra. I don't have the book anymore, I wish I did, but it was just packed. But it was just a mild curiosity that had awoken within me, just a spark of a different way of thinking and a different way of being. Years later, my brother got further and further into the spiritual path. He had a roommate at Stanford who actually was the catalyst for him to find out about yogis from the East and meditation and Yogananda and Ramakrishna and Vivekananda and all the saints which we know now, but it was very new to America at that time. The Beatles were in Rishikesh. They were meditating with a Maharishi. I lived about 2 miles from Haight-Ashbury. And it was that whole hippie movement was happening in the 60s, and people were trying new things on, new lifestyles. Well, that was just grammar school. As I went through high school, I started my own search and my own challenges, and I was searching for deeper meaning. So I went back to my brother Ananta, and I said, give me something simple, because there's so much out there, I can't deal with all these different philosophies and teachers and books and scriptures and reincarnation and karma and chakras. Just give me something really simple that I can study. So he gave me the Bhagavad Gita. Well, it's an easy read. I mean, it's short. It's Sir Edwin Arnold's translation. It had no interpretation to it. It was just the Gita. And I read it. And on the back of the cover, it said, it had quotes there from Henry David Thoreau, Ralph Waldo Emerson. And that was so amazing to me that those people, whom I had studied in high school a little bit, Thoreau was one of my favorites, and when I read Walden, and he was talking about just a simple life, living in nature, communing with nature. You don't need all these trappings. You don't need all this busyness. You can just be happy by being communing with nature. He didn't mention meditation to my knowledge. In fact, the quote is something about, I bathe my intellect every morning in the Vedas. So I read the Gita, and without any interpretation, it's not an easy book to understand. There's all those names, Kunta and Yudhisthira, and all these names, and to be honest, I still don't really get all those names and the implications of all of them. But I was struck with the tone of the book. It was uplifting, it was encouraging, and it started to give me the feel like I could do this. I could actually do this. I could pull this off. I wasn't doing it at the time. My lifestyle was completely different. And then that was about 1974, maybe, because I got out of high school in 74, and I read it towards the end of high school. And then for the next 5 years, if they ever do my autobiography, it'll be called The Dark Years. Just craziness. San Francisco, you know, after the Summer of Love, for those of you who are familiar with the Haight-Ashbury, it just went downhill. It went into the tank. Jerry Garcia said the only real thing that came out of the 60s was spirituality. And I agree with him, because the drugs all ended up at dead ends, and all the experimentation and all the craziness, it just all, for many of us, it ended up just a dead end. I didn't even know it at the time, but Swami Kriyananda was in the Haight-Ashbury during those days. He was at some of the be-ins and some of those times with Prabhupada, who's a Hare Krishna movement, Timothy Leary. There was just a lot of stuff going on. And I was a little bit younger than that curve, but I was watching it all and had two older brothers. So it was always fascinating to me. So by 74, I was out of high school. I had begun my search in more earnest, and I had the good fortune to go see Swami Kriyananda as part of a three-day Yogananda birthday celebration, January 5th, 6th, and 7th, in Stern Grove in San Francisco. And it was a Sunday lecture, and it was about the Bhagavad Gita. I've heard Swami speak many times, and I've been blessed to be at many a great talk by many a great teacher. We have Asha here. But I've never, ever heard a talk like that. It was all day, and it was about the Bhagavad Gita. How do you get a handle on this book? What does it mean? What is the scripture all about? He talks about how each individual person in the Gita represents a mental citizen or a psychological trait in our own being. He talked about how the battlefield of Kurukshetra is within us. It's in our heart. And this dialogue between Arjuna and Krishna is a dialogue between each one of us and God. That each one of us is fighting that battlefield of Kurukshetra on a daily basis. Now, I have been raised Catholic, and the emphasis that I got out of that was there was a tremendous amount of emphasis on sin and on judgment and on anger. I was listening to the radio once, and I listened to the born-again minister sometimes for fun, and this man had counted 160 places in the Bible where it mentions that God is angry. The trouble with that approach is that it's hard to feel devotion to someone who's always angry and who's always mad at you. Or worse still, when we internalize ourselves and we define ourselves as sinners. Swami, in his extended interpretation of today's reading, talks about how when you view yourself as a sinner or bad or unworthy, you're basically cutting yourself off from the flow, from your divine potential, and that it's self-perpetuating because you sin, and then you feel bad because you sinned, and then you sin again. And then you feel bad because you sinned, and then on and on and on. I always thought that alcohol was so popular, partly because you get that hangover the next day. You party, you have a good time, but then you pay the price the next morning, and then you feel okay about going out that night and getting drunk again, because you've paid the price. But I was here at that day, and it was interesting because I had one foot in both canoes, so to speak. I got a ride home after that day, and I was just spinning with inspiration from Swami. And I told the people, I said, oh, you better not come in, because it could set you back lifetimes if you came into my apartment. And I was kind of cheeky, but I look back now, even now, or especially now when I have a little bit of perspective, but that was a turning point. That was in January. Later that year, I quit my job in the city. I moved up to Ocean Song in Sonoma County. Shortly after that, I moved to Ananda House in San Francisco, and I lived there for many years, and then I come down here. It's not like the tests end, though. It's not like, oh, well, now I have 20 years or 30 or 25 or 15 or whatever it is. The tests are every single day. And what Swami says in both the poem that was read from Whispers from Eternity and in his writings and what he was saying on his most recent visit is you should never accept that definition of yourself as being less than the divine. That's easier said than done, because as you go through the years, you fail. It's just inevitable. It's a part of the spiritual path, is that you fall short of the mark, because the mark is so high. Yogananda was talking about total self-realization and total liberation. And that's what Arjuna, at one point, his bow droops. So he drops his bow, which is his arrow, and he's about to go to war, and he has these two armies on either side. I didn't understand what he was saying until I read Swami's, or actually until he gave the lecture. The bow is the arched back when we're meditating. And what devotee hasn't at some point thought about giving up and thought about, oh, it's just not worth it. I'm never going to make it. Others might make it, but I'm never going to make it. And so Arjuna droops in the chariot. And Krishna says to him, why do you give up at such an odd hour? But what's odd about the hour is that he's really close to passing the test. He's really close to liberation. In fact, Master said that he was Arjuna in that life, and that is the lifetime that he became liberated in. And then we go full circle to the Herbst Theater, and Swami is standing up there, and it was a combination of seeing the book that he had in his hand, that he had met with Master when he was in his early 20s, and that's when Master said, I want you to come to the desert with me, and I want you to edit this book, to edit the Gita. He was a very, very young man. He was new to the path himself. He's brilliant, but even he felt, I'm not ready to do this. So here we are all these years later that he finally gets the chance to do the book, to interpret it, to write it. Master and God works on an entirely different time frame. He planted a seed back in 1968 with me in that daily meditations. He gave me Sir Edwin Arnold when I needed just a simple book that I could kind of get my mind around. He put me at Stern Grove where I started to feel like I could actually maybe do this. It's not like I'm going to be this great yogi by any means. I don't think I'm alone in that haunting doubting of like, I don't think I can, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy. It's pandemic in our culture. And now I see him at the Herbst Theater, and I see him standing up there, and it was a combination of the book and just his very being, because I've known him these years, and the test that he's fought, and the test that he's overcome, and the example he has set for all of us, that we do, I mean, the part of the path is just to keep going, no matter what. He said in that lecture, the transcription of the lecture is actually available in a booklet at the boutique. It's called Keys to the Bhagavad Gita. I would really recommend buying it as a companion to the Gita. And we have the Gita now that we can have by the side of our bed, is what I do. And every night before I go to bed, I just open it up to a page and I just read one passage. And the tone of the Gita is always encouraging. It's always, you can do it. It's always, it gives you the how to do it. It's beyond a book. It's like the voice of God speaks to each and every one of us. And the other treat that I think we can get and look forward to is this fall, Asha's book is coming out. And I haven't read the whole thing yet, but I read a large chunk of it from the middle. And the combination of that, because it's just little stories of how Swami works with people. And it's taking the lessons from the Gita or the scriptures or any one of these higher teachings, and how do we apply it to our life? And that's what the Gita is about to me, is it's a manual for how to live in this world, with our jobs, with our families, with our finances, with our coworkers, with our own personal tests, with our own doubts, whatever it is we're working on, you will find the answers in the Gita. Thank you.
Two Catholic boys here, talking a little bit about the change from whereas suffering and sorrow in the past, or the coin of man's redemption, as we say in the festival you'll hear, the payment has been exchanged for calm acceptance and joy, which we both like a lot. But I wanted to talk about that aspect as well, of the subject being the redeeming light. Because on the one hand, you can hear from people like Swami, Master, talking about what that light is in its highest, deepest sense, about the fact that, like with Master, that blinding flash that just took away his cholera and he was completely cured. Or saints that see that blinding flash of light and just are one with God, and that just changes them completely on a cellular level. And we might, you know, wish for that state or hear about it and think, I'm really far from that. In fact, somebody asked, I think it was Rajasi, Master's disciple, very advanced disciple, for just a little taste of samadhi. You know, can't you give me just a little bit? And Rajas, he said, if I give it to you, first of all, you're not prepared for it, so it would just, I'm using my own words, but it would cook you. And second of all, you wouldn't be able to stand your life anymore as it is. Wow. Okay, so that's a little beyond where we are right now. But what can we do where we are right now? Well, I want to talk about that other meaning of light, which in the English language we're fortunate to have, which is lightness, you know? And on the one hand, we could think of it, okay, a brief mini-second summary of cosmic creation, where God started being infinitely, I mean, there's no such thing as weight or time or space or any of those things. It's just pure consciousness, pure joy, pure love, pure light, if you will, in that sense. But it really even preceded, you know, material, physical light that we see, just pure consciousness. And then the way he created this, so we're told, is that he created vibration. He vibrated himself. And what is vibration? What does it create? Light? Sound? He vibrated even more. That created energy. Even more, and that created stuff. This, us. And there's a book that Swami wrote called Education for Life, and it's what our schools are based on. And one aspect of that is it talks about children's consciousness, which relates to where we're at too, and it talks about their specific gravity, to tune into a child's specific gravity of consciousness. Are they kind of tending to be sort of heavy in their consciousness at this point, or sort of, it's like a thermometer, you know, one of those ones that floats kind of. And it's useful to sort of reflect in any moment, in any given situation, where are we at? Where's our specific gravity at? How's my kind of thermometer doing here? Am I sort of tending towards the heavy side? Or am I looking towards the light? And one way we can do that, I think, is by lightening up, by seeing the lighter side of things. Master actually said we should read one funny story every day. And I've had a thought recently, it'd be great to collect funny stories and make a, you know, book or a website or something like that, or an email thing of one funny story each day, you know, for at least a year. So if you have any, send them along and we'll see if anything comes of it, or somebody else may want to do it, whatever. But it's important in any given situation we're in. It's so easy for us to just get caught up. And you see, that's how all this world keeps going. That's how creation keeps happening, is because that vibration is still moving out and it's getting caught in the dense stuff. What we're doing on the spiritual path is reversing that. We're saying, okay, this has been fun, but I'm ready to go home now. In fact, redeeming light, it's an interesting word, redeem. You know, what does it mean? It means to buy back. You know, cash in your redemption stamps, if you remember those. Anyway, but to just say, okay, enough of this stuff. I'm ready to cash in this material attachment, you know, all these desires and attachments and worries and fears and all the heavy stuff. I know that where it's at is the light. I know that that's where I came from. That's what preceded all this. That's where my happiness lies. That's the truth in any given situation that I'm in. You know, whatever challenge we're facing, this is where we can relate to it right now in our daily life. And this is how saints get to be saints. Whatever comes to you, whatever is yours right now, whatever situation is yours, look at that, and instead of resisting it, you know, which makes it tighter and heavier, just say, huh, okay, so God, this is from you. This is perfect loving. This is for me to get closer to you. How can I just relax and embrace this? And just notice how our attitude, our consciousness just lightens up. You know, our thermometer rises a little bit. And I remember going to Yosemite years ago in one of those little visitor centers, you know, information centers in the small town preceding Yosemite. Just had a conversation with a person in there and about how long he'd been there, et cetera. And he said he'd been there for a lot of years. And the reason that he really loved it there, one thing he noticed is that everybody was always looking up. And I thought about that, and it's true, you know, there's just so many things you're looking around at, looking up all the time. And doesn't that attitude of looking up just make everybody a lot more up? You know, so I want to invite all of us just to relate more to God in that sense of delight, devotee levity. And that prepares us to receive that higher light. In fact, that light, that conscious light, is always there like a loving mother, just ready to lift us up. The trouble is that when our consciousness is too dense, you know, I don't know if you've ever felt like that, I just really feel dense today, you know. That light can't come in. It's like too many cloud covers, you know. But if we can, I mean, even physically, stepping outside and just looking up at the sun, you know, It helps. It kind of reminds us of that inner sun that we need to look up into all the time. And by doing that, we purify our hearts. And in fact, every religion, every spiritual technique we do, that's the purpose of it all, is to just help us to lighten up, to purify our hearts, to prepare ourselves for that redeeming light.